starting off in a kind of a topic that came up about the middle way, but maybe a way to deal with Social Security. It almost sounds like not as much focusing on current seniors, but start focusing on the people that are going to be seniors in 30, 40 years. Can you talk about that?
Well, we can't forget about the current seniors, certainly. They've had difficulties in recent years without a cost of living adjustment, for example. And we've got to really work on that so that doesn't happen again. And we've got to make sure that Social Security is there for those who are currently in Social Security. But certainly the bigger challenge is those who are not at the age yet to receive Social Security. And we've got to find ways to make sure that Social Security is solvent. And I threw it open, you know, to folks, and there weren't a lot of alternatives out there thrown out, but that's where we have our work cut out for us, I think, in Congress. I mean, it's hard enough, as you know, with the partisan food fights, for us to come together on smaller issues, let alone the bigger issues like this. And then it's bound up in the deficit issue and the long-term debt issue, too. But clearly, we've got to deal with this, and we've got to resolve the issue. There's no way around it.
Could it be somewhere where just providing that more info to say, hey, you know, if you start saving now, if you start doing this, just maybe a little more education could be a key?
Education is important for doing things beyond Social Security in addition to Social Security. And again, I think it is a personal responsibility issue. I talk about that a lot, as you know. And so for just to do what we can, like you said, from an education standpoint, or public relations standpoint, making people aware that Social Security is not going to be enough for you when you retire. We want that to be there. We want that to be intact. But that's not going to be enough. You have to take some responsibility for supplementing that Social Security income, as current seniors on Social Security would testify, and maybe having more of those folks tell younger folks about their own experiences is a way to get that point across as well.
How do you even go about addressing Social Security and Medicare are such controversial issues when it always seems like it's election time?
Well,
how do you get past that?
But that's important because we do have elections in this country, because members of Congress and the president can be held accountable every 2 or 4 years. The more people who talk to me about this and urge me to get this done, the more people who talk to other members of Congress and the president to make sure that we know that we're being forced by the American people to do this, the more likely it is we're going to resolve the issue.
There's one of the gentlemen said a line that was very interesting. He said, he said to stop lying, but it said, if something's bad, tell us it's bad.
That's right.
Does that even go on? Why is it so easy to spin instead of just saying, this is a problem, this is what we're going to do?
Well, I think most people don't want to talk about, you know, the reality. But the American people tell me, the people in the district tell me all the time, here's the reality, here are the problems, you got to do something about this. Look, I think most members of Congress, the president, you know, obviously most of the time want to, you know, be positive, paint a rosy picture and all the rest. But the only way we can possibly be positive moving forward, I think, is if we correctly diagnose the problem. That's what he's talking about.
How do you get people even, I mean, how cordial are people on the different aisles in Washington? I mean, you see the anger, you see the yelling and stuff,
right?
But what is it behind the scenes?
Well, one of the first people I'm going to talk to when I go back is going to be Ron Paul, and I'm going to talk to him about, you know, how things are going in Iowa and the debates and all that. And you know, he's running for president, but I consider him a friend. And one of the first things I do when I go back, every time, is go over to the other side of the aisle and sit down and talk with my friends on the other side of the aisle, ask them how their weekend was, how their district work period was, what are they hearing out there in the country. And I think that's how we start this process, and it's something I've tried to do since I've been there. And I think that's in part why I've been able to get the kind of support from the other side of the aisle I have that I mentioned here on some bills. I think it's been really, really a good way to go about that.
Do you see your colleagues, though, doing that same thing?
I see some on the other side of the aisle, too. I see some Democrats doing that. There's more of it than we often hear about. And again, I'm not, you know, laying the blame at the feet of the media for not covering it. That's not my point. But there are more out there. There are more success stories. We have these different bipartisan caucuses, the Common Grounds Caucus, you know, the Center Aisle Caucus. There are a number of groups getting together from time to time to first start out with personal relationships and then try to build from there. And more of that's happening, actually, than people know.
Just wanted to ask on the kind of Medicare issue. I've been getting a number of emails from the NRCC, if I have that acronym.
Oh, right. Yeah, right.
And they are saying that you are trying to cut Medicare.
Right.
And I know, I think it relates back to that.
To the health care bill.
Right.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really a cut. How are you telling people that
there are no cuts to benefits.
Right. That's
at
I'm
all.
Sorry. Right.
This is $500 billion over 10 years of savings and efficiencies. Cutting out fraud and abuse, something everybody wants to do. Moving the system from one based, as I said before, on Medicare reimbursements based on fee-for-service to Medicare reimbursement based on value, something everyone wants to see us do. There are savings that we can have in the Medicare system that have no effect whatsoever on the beneficiaries. That's the point. It's the political season. People are going to want, you know, to make these kinds of attacks and charges. They're simply not true.
So how close is it to be? I mean, because Iowa obviously is not getting as much money back in the REAM. How close is it to a change in that type of a system?
I think we're going to see it a few years down the road. Some hospitals have already been reimbursed. We had $400 million set aside for 2 years. Some have been reimbursed, actually, because of those low payments. We could get to that list if you like. But that has begun to happen. But, again, we've got to implement these changes, are pretty significant changes, and once the health care law is put into effect, that's when we're going to begin to see it.
Any update on the Keokuk Hospital?
That's going to be my other question.
I don't have anything at this point. Okay. No, nothing more than what you know about it. I mean, we're trying to get it reclassified, you know, trying to do any number of things.
Any reaction from Kathleen Sebelius about meeting with them? Has there been any progress on that letter?
I haven't seen anything the last week, and that's so I can't speak beyond that.
All right.
Okay. For the Purple Heart, we just don't have the Purple Heart itself yet.
How quickly can that be? I mean, obviously,
we don't know yet. We don't know yet. I mean, we want this to happen before he passes, of course.
All right. Mm-hmm. That is.